Believes a lot in coincidence. I believe in providence. And I have to say, the other day, Carol called me up, Carol Knaus called me up, and told me she was going to be doing the children's story, and I thanked her for the Easter story, and she said she wanted to talk about forgiveness. And I said, well, isn't that interesting? That's exactly what I'm going to be preaching on, or at least part of what I'm going to be preaching on today. And then Vaughn was sharing with me some things that he had come across this week before the church service he was sharing with me. I don't believe it's by coincidence that I'm preaching on what I'm preaching on this week and for the next 4 or 5 weeks. We're going to be talking about something that scares everyone in this room. It's called identity theft. I want to ask you to put your hands up if you have ever had your identity stolen from you. But I know, well, see, I ask them not to, and they do. That's pretty good. That's just like a 3-year-old child, you know. You tell them not to do it, that's a sure way they're going to do it. Thank you, guys. There is nothing worse than having your identity stolen from you. There's nothing worse than Brenda and I being in Phoenix, Arizona, and going to use my ATM card, and it won't work. And it won't work because it was blocked by my bank. And it was blocked from my bank because while I was in Phoenix, somebody in North Carolina was buying things. And I clarified with them, and they released my funds then, and we were good for the rest of the way home. Otherwise, I'd have been calling Vaughn for a loan or come and pick us up. It is a tremendous worry. And yet some of us are in a spiritual battle in which we don't know who we are. At best, our life has been clouded by relationships. Scars of the past have blurred our picture of ourselves. We opened our worship service with one of, and I will say absolutely one of the most popular songs on Christian radio today. As soon as the slide came up, the cheering squad down here in the front just went crazy, the little girls. It's a song by Lauren Daigle. She just keeps putting out hit after hit after hit after hit after hit. It's a song that reaffirms how God looks at us, not how we look at ourselves. It clarifies the crisis we have about who we are. Next week, we're going to celebrate Mother's Day, and then the rest of the month, we're going to go back on the series on identity theft. This morning I brought with me a little toy. You may have one of these in your house. We don't anymore, but we used to. But I borrowed this from the nursery down the hall from my office. We all know what it is. You take these little things and you try to fit them in the various spots that they're supposed to fit in. It's like, you know, in our life, sometimes we feel like we're a square hole, a square peg trying to fit in a round hole. I have this vivid memory of our son when he was just a toddler, and he was fighting with a toy similar to this, trying to get them all to go through. And finally, he stomped into the kitchen, and his mother asked him what he wanted. He said he wanted a hammer. He was going to make it fit one way or another. I told somebody, I hesitate to say this, but I think for some people in the South, some of our southern states, they use this as part of their ACT test to get you into college. That's just a joke. Don't take offense if you're from the South. I was going to name states, but if I named a state, surely somebody would be here from that state, and I would never hear the end, you know? I was going to say Alabama, To be honest with you, I was going to say Alabama, but I know that Miss Marie is from Alabama. And when I go to Marie's house the next time, she's not going to give me any of that ice cream that she always gives me every time I go to see her house, go to her house. Am I right, Burrow? Amen. Thumbs up on the ice cream. You betcha. Have you ever felt like you didn't fit in? You try everything and you still fail. You change yourself and you still fail. I want to tell you today to stop trying to be something or someone you're not. Solomon had it all. If you read about Solomon in the Old Testament, and I have a passage, Ecclesiastes 2, 1 to 11, and we're not going to read that passage today, but you can look at it. But let me summarize it up for you. Solomon was the wealthiest man on the planet. He made Bill Gates look like a pauper. He had money, he had power, he had fame, he had lands, he had it all. And this is his conclusion. It's in the 11th verse of that second chapter of Ecclesiastes. Yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless, a mere chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun. It's like chasing after the wind. Have you tried to chase the wind in southwest Kansas? Not going to happen. So stop trying to be someone you're not. But then we turn to Proverbs 19:22, and the same man reveals what really is the driving force behind man. And he says in 19:22, what a person desires. This is the one thing the person desires, is unfailing love. That's it. That's what we really desire. Unfailing love. But until we get to the point that we accept his unfailing love, we try everything on our own. We seek our own identity, and as the song says, in all the wrong places. So here's what we seek. Point number one, we seek identity and acceptance, security, and significance. We change who we are depending on the crowd because we are desperate to be accepted. We marry the first person that comes along because we think they'll make us safe, and then they don't. We all want to feel significant, to feel important. One wife told me the only time her husband ever put her on a pedestal was to paint the ceiling. We want to be significant. We want security. We want acceptance. So our lives become a mess, and we can't understand why the relationships we have are falling apart. A few years ago, there was a movie called Jerry Maguire. There are three famous lines from that movie. The most famous line of all was, "Show me the money." And then the next famous line was, "You had me at hello." And then the third one, Tom Cruise looks at his wife and he says, "You complete me." And we look for those who are going to complete us. Maybe you're like the wife who exclaimed, "I knew I was marrying Mr. Wright. I just didn't know his first name was Always." But point A, we seek relationships with those who can complete us. It just makes me want to gag to think that it's about finding someone to complete me. Trust me, I don't complete my wife. I don't. Especially on those days like the other night when I opened up a can of peanuts, and as I did, it flipped up in the air, falling upside down, scattering every peanut all over the floor. Trust me, the last words on her mind were not, "You complete me." But the real question, the real thing you want to know is, did I still eat the peanuts? What do you think? Yes. Have you ever been to our house? You could eat off the floor. Not because of me. I have a wonderful wife who keeps everything clean. But I do not complete my wife. I'm a person who fails miserably and can disappoint. Relationships can hurt us. We try to make our identity in that other person. That's called codependency. And I'm a codependent. If you know me, you know. I want to fix everything. Come in my office, I want to fix you. It's just what preachers do. Every preacher has some codependency in us. I just have a whole bunch. But we disappoint each other. We find ourselves trapped in a relationship and we don't know what to do. We feel like a square peg in a round hole. People even stay in abusive relationships, which I encourage them not to do, because they want to feel accepted and loved, and they just hope that one day it's going to change. But what happens is we become angry and bitter, and that's point B. We are often left angry and bitter. Anger and bitterness eats away at us and steals our joy. Write that down. You don't need to write that down. Just remember it. It steals our joy. It consumes us and becomes the singular focus of our minds. Here are some things the Bible says about anger. It makes us spiritually blind. John 1. I'm going to go through these quickly. If you want to see me afterwards, I'll give you the references. Makes us spiritually blind. John 1. Never looks to forgive. Matthew 6. It affects my prayer life. 1 Peter. Bitterness becomes a prison, Matthew 18 and Acts 8. Makes our offerings ineffective, Matthew 5. It changes my personality. It destroys my health, Job 21. Don't let people steal your joy. Don't let people steal your life. But instead, learn to forgive. And that's point number two. We experience the power of forgiveness. Forgiveness is not forgetting. Forgiveness is not forgetting. It is letting go of that cycle of bitterness. The goal of forgiveness is not forgetting, but attaining freedom. That's point B. Point A, excuse me. The goal of forgiveness is freedom. I mentioned to you last week that for Mother's Day, I decided to let four mothers pick out the songs. And so I went to one of our ladies and I said, I would like you to pick out a song for Mother's Day. And I will tell you, her first choice was You Say. And I said to her, no, we're singing that already the week before. And she said, well, I'll send Karen a list. So she sent on that list about 50 songs. Told Karen to pick out one. One of the ones that we picked out we're going to actually use today. Matthew West, a few years ago, wrote a song about forgiveness. And I want to play a video for you that tells the story behind the song. And if you need a box of tissue, I'll just tell you, you're going to need a box of tissue. I'll just let Barb play it.
Over the past few years, I've been on this journey of writing songs inspired by the real life stories that people sent to me. This one story in particular has had a profound impact on me. It hit me kind of hard. It's about a woman who did the impossible, and it made me ask myself if I can do the same. Renee had four kids. Two of her daughters were twins. Megan was coming home from the beach one night with her best friend when their car was struck by a drunk driver named Eric, a 24-year-old kid. Megan lost her life. Eric killed both girls that were in the car. Renee lost her daughter in an instant. Next thing she knows, she finds herself in a courtroom watching this young man, this 24-year-old man, get sentenced to 22 years in prison. Renee wrote to me and said, "I now have a mission that I never would have chosen." What she meant by that is that in the years that follow, she began to travel around to schools and churches and different functions, and she would speak about the dangers of drunk driving. But as the years progressed, she felt like something was missing from her presentations. And that's when God put it on her heart that she had not forgiven this man who took the life of her daughter. And so she reached out and did the impossible. She reached out to Eric in prison and said, "I forgive you." The ripple effects of that act of forgiveness are still being felt today. That young man's life was absolutely changed because this woman forgave him. He said, "I can't even forgive myself," and she forgave me. Eric said he found his eternal salvation as a result of this act. One by one, all of Renee's family members followed her lead, and they reached out and expressed forgiveness to Eric. So much so that now they describe Eric as part of their family, like a son to Renee. The story doesn't stop there though. Renee went to the courts along with her family, and she was able to have Eric's sentence cut in half from 22 years to 11 years. This blew me away. The reason she did it is so that Eric could have a second chance at life and so that he could join her in their presentations. She told me that now she shares not only about the dangers of drunk driving, but also about the power of forgiveness.
Now, the story behind this song is from someone right here in our area. We're going to let her tell the story. She won't know you're here. Are you comfortable with hiding?
I'm comfortable with hiding. I'm nervous right
me
now.
Me too, my balls are sweaty.
She has no idea I'm here.
Yeah,
no.
She doesn't even,
and this is the thing, she has no idea that there's been a song written inspired by her story. I'm in another room waiting to go in there and surprise Renee. I can see her on a video screen. She has no idea I'm in the room right next.
And you submitted the story, I know, to Matthew West.
It's a story that needs to be told, right? Because not for me, it's not about me, it's about God, and it's about forgiveness. And so I thought, well, I'm just going to chance this. And I sent it in, and I just prayed, you know, God, if this is supposed to happen, then I just, you know, hope that it will.
You know, we know Matthew, and he wrote a song about your story.
No way.
Matthew has sent us the song because he wanted you to be one of the first people to hear it.
Oh my God.
Are you ready to hear it?
Yes.
It's called Forgiveness.
It's called Forgiveness.
Ever seen him in concert or
no,
did you?
No, and I wanted to see him. I tried to go see him when he was in West Palm because I thought that I would have a presentation down there. And
right.
I thought,
during
and
the then story of course, of your
you
life
know,
tour?
Yeah, yes. No, actually, I don't know if it was that he tried, you know, he's like,
right.
They sent out a thing if you're going to be in any of these cities, and they were all too far away. And then when he was
right.
at the thing in Orlando, I thought, well, I'm going to, you know, go see him, you know, then.
Right.
And I had to go present.
So you never could make the connection
never
with him
could.
Personally?
Never could.
Never seen him?
No.
Turn around.
Where are you?
Not in my notes, but you ask me why I resonate so with contemporary music, because that just hits me right in the head. Because forgiveness is tough. Point B, forgiveness is a choice. Forgiveness is a choice you have to make. Renee had to make that choice to forgive that man. Like everything in life, it's a choice. And so we make choices in the realm of forgiveness. Mike Bro, and I want to say right up front that some of the thoughts of some of the things that I'm sharing this week and throughout this series come from my friend Mike Bro, who's a preacher in Southern California now. But he shared a poem that his mother-in-law wrote on forgiveness. I want to share it with you. Molly Watts is her name. You can Google it and come up with a prayer. Molly Watts, this is her prayer on forgiveness. Dear Lord, it's me again. Have you got a little time? It will only take a minute. I have something on my mind. I know I've got this neighbor and your help I have to seek, for I find it very difficult to turn the other cheek. You see, I've got two poodles that we've come to love a lot. And Lord, you know that dogs must go outside to use the pot. Most always they stay in our yard. They don't stray far from home. But last Thursday they decided to her front yard they would roam. Lord, they didn't know any better and they didn't mean no harm, but they made a little deposit in the middle of her lawn. Well, she went up and got her shovel and with words a little scorched, she marched up to my door, Lord, and she threw it on my porch. Love thy neighbor as thyself are words that came from you, and if I want to get to heaven, I must want that for her too. So I'm trying hard to love her, even though it's sometimes hard, and I'm making sure my poodles do not wander to her yard. I pray she'll get to heaven, but should there be no one around, could you grant me just one favor, and could you put some dog dew in her crown? You've thought the same thing, I know. After some reflection, she wrote the following as God's response. My child, I've heard you praying and I listened to your plea. I think I have an answer if you'll listen to me. When both you and your neighbor have been up here a while, perhaps you'll dance the golden streets and step into a great big pile. Then, my child, you will go to her and help her to her seat. And with a towel and basin, you'll wash your feet. Forgiveness. It's tough stuff. So who does God say we are? Point number three. God says our identity is in Him. Our identity is in Him. I want to read a passage. If you want to turn to Ephesians 3, 14 to 19. I want to read this wonderful, wonderful prayer. It's a second prayer of Paul to the church in Ephesus. For this reason I kneel before the Father, from whom every family in heaven and on earth derives its name. I pray that out of His glorious riches He may strengthen you with power through His Spirit in your inner being, so that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith. And I pray that you, being rooted and established in love, may have power together with all the Lord's holy people to grasp how wide and long and high and deep is the love of God. I'm going to say that word is actually unfailing love of Christ. And to know this love that surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled to the measure of all the fullness of God. Unfailing love is mentioned 40 times in the Bible. I want to focus on just this one. You see, in each one of us, there is a God-shaped hole. There's no hammer necessary. If you're lonely and feeling abandoned, God fits that hole. If you're broken by bad relationships and poor choices, God fits that hole. If your life is a mess, God fits that hole. In this wonderful prayer, God says to, Paul says to grasp or capture, depending on what your version says, to grasp or capture, take hold of his unfailing love. Here's what that word grasp literally means. Do you know what rust does to something? It eats right through it, right? That's exactly the word here. In other words, this unfailing love is to eat right through us. Eat right through us. It is to consume us. It is to devour us. Because when we let it do that, we don't call ourselves all those other names. We call ourselves a child of the Most High God. And that's who you are. That's who I am. That's our identity. Here's what God says about you and your new identity. I want you to travel back with me to 2002, and some of you may have gone to a movie in that year. And in that beginning scene of that movie is a man floating in the Mediterranean Sea. And he's rescued by a fishing boat, and they help him gain strength. And they discover in the back of him a chip, and on that chip all they can figure out is it says something to a reference to a bank. So he has no idea who he is. He has no idea what the chip is about. But he goes to the bank and they hand him a box. And in that box is a stash of money and several passports. Through the entire movie, he doesn't know who he is. He keeps saying, I don't even know who I am. I don't know who I am. But soon he realizes that he is Jason Bourne, a CIA agent. And everybody's out to get him. The movie was called The Bourne Identity. You and I have spent much of our lives wondering who we are. We've tried this and we've dabbled at that only to ask the question, who am I? We sought it in relationships that failed and robbed us of our identity. We tried it in all sorts of things. But God says you have a new born identity. That is to be a child of God. In Christ, I am no longer a square peg trying to fit into a round hole. I am a child of God with a hole in my heart that only God can fill. In him I find acceptance, in him I find security, in him I find significance. And here's the equation. And Laura Daigle said it best in her song, go back and listen to the words. But she talked about believing. She talked about accepting. And that equals child of God. We need to believe, we need to accept, and that makes us a child of God. So I ask you today, are you struggling with your identity? Are you struggling with who you are? Have you been robbed by the relationships that you have? Has your identity been stolen, spiritual identity been stolen? We're going to sing that song, Forgiveness. It may be new to some of us know it very well. But I want you to let those words fill your heart as we realize when we make that song.